Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Guma. And joining me to wrap this week up are Carl Geewers from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Rikus Reeders from PSG Wealth Cent. And thank you very much to both of you for joining me. Let's start off with macro. Carl, starting with you. Considering what happened with the Fed increasing interest rates by 50 basis points and saying that they're going to stay away from 75 basis points, and looking at how the markets reacted initially, where we saw the markets being happy, and then after that, we saw the markets going into deep losses. Were you surprised by any of those moves?
No, I think, I mean, certainly not surprised by the volatility. I think, I mean, if you look at the market's focus, I think obviously earlier in the week, it was very much focused on the Fed and the central banks and their what they're saying. And I think there was probably a bit of relief by the US hiking at 50 basis point increments, or at least sort of indicating that. And that, I think based on that, you know, the market rallied. But I think then the reality of you know, very high inflation, you've got the various factors impacting growth. So I think economic growth outlook becoming a reality that, you know, we might be looking at a potential recession in the next couple of years. And that's, you know, if you look at China, their lockdowns, you've got the war in Ukraine, you've got rising rates also, you know, making life difficult for consumers, so and corporates to borrow. So borrowing is more expensive. So I think all of those really ultimately are pointing towards slower growth going forward. And I think that is what the market is now grappling with. And you saw the Nasdaq yesterday getting hammered down 5%. A lot of those high growth, you know, a lot of growth priced into a lot of the tech names are coming under pressure. So the growth area is going to come under a lot of pressure. And we also saw some pressure in the commodity space. Again, economic growth outlook being a bit more murky than the market would like to have. So I think it certainly is a volatile environment, and we'll see the market, you know, on reasonably good news maybe might swing a bit, but I think we'll see some big moves in the market. But overall, it's probably on the downside if one looks at the factors at play.
All right. You know, we've come from a period where we had easy money, and now we're going back to normalization where interest rates are higher and there's less liquidity going around. And, you know, Rikus, should we be panicking then at these deep losses? And is this not maybe a valuation story where valuations come from? They were really high and now they're sort of coming back to normal.
Yeah, I've always said you can't time the market, but you can time your exposure to the market. And over the past couple of months, if you had followed that strategy, you should be sitting with a fairly liquid position as far as cash is concerned. Going forward, opportunity will present itself, but we are still, as Carl said, an extremely volatile environment where adjustments are being made to the downside. So whether one should employ that cash right at the moment, I don't think so, because I do believe that we can go lower, specifically as we are heading into an historically weaker period in the market, you know, that normally lasts from about May to September, plus all the other macro factors that Carl has mentioned, also weighing on sentiment. So in that sense, one should never panic, but one should be in a position to take care of opportunity and also take care of your capital as to not have more losses as one goes forward. So I think if as with any trade or any investment, if you've previously set a stop loss level as to when you go out, in other words, when the risk of holding becomes more than the opportunity cost of actually holding onto a share, you should be in a position to have cash available to go into the market when we get to reasonable value, taking into consideration everything that's happening, not merely economically, but geopolitically as well.
All right, let's take a look at some stocks and where we can find opportunity. What is the panel's view on AB and Bev on these levels for mid to long-term hold? Of course, they did come out with their first quarter results yesterday. An essay saying that their sales went up by almost a third, those largely being driven by the beer of champions, a.k.a. Carling Black Label. Carl, your take on holding AB and Bev in these levels?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a company that's got quite a good product, you know, if everyone looks at the demand side, I think it should continue to grow marginally. I mean, it's already so big that it does, you know, you're going to get your 2-4% growth. You know, that'll probably be the upside in terms of the volume growth that they can get. So just in terms of size, they're probably very big, and you know, you're not going to get your huge growth out of them. Having said that, I mean, as a company, they're reasonable quality. I mean, they've taken SAB. So if you just look at that market, I think quite entrenched and a very strong competitive position, and they've got that throughout the world, so very well diversified. So it's probably one of those that make up a nice core component of a portfolio for the long term.
Rick is holding AB and Bev in those levels, mid to long term.
Yeah, I think for the next year or so, as we're talking about global economic slowdown and AB InBev being in that defensive type of sector as far as beverages is concerned, plus the fact that operationally, as Carl said, you know they're not going to shoot the lights out as far as volume is volumes are concerned, but considering the debt they have, considering the cash flow they have, and the fact that they are reducing that debt, obviously that makes their gearing profile looking a lot better. So in that sense, you're going to get the benefit, as I've said, from reducing debt, plus the defensive nature of the operation. So it's not a bad thing to be in while we're looking at this global slowdown that we've got at the moment.
So quite a defensive one there. Let's go into retail. There's a question here. Recently published numbers for Pepco indicate improved operational performance and also an indication that it is successfully digesting the Steinhoff overhang. however, the fact that 50% of South Africa depend on social grants is but one indicator of the shape the economy really is in. Given the market segment that Pepco favors, can we expect the share price to remain resilient in the long term? Carl?
Yeah, I think, you know, if one looks at Pepco and where they operate in terms of the market, I think they certainly do benefit from the lower income, you know, area. So the market that receives grants, so they probably would be one of the big customers of Pepco. And I think in terms of the price point, I think that's quite an important element to also consider. So the ability to be quite defensive, you know, when people are under pressure in terms of, you know, losing jobs and stuff, Pepco is probably one that will continue to get some support. They sell a lot of basics like school uniforms and so on. So I think they're quite defensive in terms of the clothing, apparel, retail area. And then also they're still majority cash-based, so I think that is also plays in their favour. But I think overall, you know, the SA consumer, as interest rates rise, will come under pressure. We've seen the jobs numbers not looking great, and just overall economic growth will continue to be pretty slow. So I think overall retail probably I'd stick to the more defensive names, but I think within the apparel retail, Pepco is quite a decent operation, especially the Pep brand. I mean, some of the other brands that they picked up via Steinhoff are probably not the best in those, like Hi-Fi Corporation and so on. But I think the Pep, which is majority of the business, I would definitely like for the long term.
Someone also that likes a Pepco is Moody's. They recently upgraded the company's credit ratings. Rikus, on your end, Pepco in the non-grocery retailer space?
I think Carla has covered the domestic operations pretty well, and I'll have nothing to add to that. What interests me is Poland. And it sort of ties in with my stock pick at the end of this program. But Poland is interesting as far as geopolitics are concerned. And specifically, it relates to the war that's happening at the moment in the Ukraine. Poland has become the nexus of the US's involvement in Europe, both in terms of sending the military there. And once the US military arrives in a country, it's very difficult to get them out. And that just the fact that it is so important strategically for US means that there's US investment moving to Poland as well. So, and I'm talking long term here. So over the next 5 to 10 years, with the backing of the US, Poland can become quite a growth center as far as Europe is concerned. And Pepco is there. So that makes an interesting optionality as far as Pepco is concerned.
All right. Quite interesting. Thank you very much for that, Rikus. There's one question that goes, Buffett does not believe in Bitcoin and increased his share in Chevron and Apple. What is the panel's view? I'm not sure if you guys want to comment on Bitcoin. But Carl, just your take on Berkshire increasing its share in Chevron and Apple. You can pick one of those, and then Rikus can maybe talk about the other.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Bitcoin, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's a currency, and it could go to zero. Whereas a company like Apple, for example, generates cash flow, you get dividends paid out of it. So, and there's growth. You know, so I definitely stick to owning equities. And in this case, I would definitely support the Apple case. I think within the tech names, Apple's probably one of my, one of my favorites, given that it's got quite a competitive product. I know it's sort of maturing, but they keep innovating, very cash generative, very good balance sheet, a lot of cash on the balance sheet. Just in terms of the ability to continue growing, I think the Apple customers are fairly loyal, and that gives them a competitive advantage in terms of pricing. So Apple, definitely, I agree with Buffett there.
I think right now Berkshire is the biggest shareholder of Apple outside of ETFs. Rikus, your take, do you want to stick to Apple, or do you want to talk about Chevron?
Well, yeah, again, I agree with Carl as far as Apple's concerned. As long as they keep on innovating, that continuously changes their income going or income profile going forward, and that's the type of company I like. Chevron, obviously, energy at the moment, and it will be tied to what's happening with energy prices. Now, at the moment, people think that the oil price is quite elevated, and, if you compare it to the past, it's expensive. But imagine the following scenario. China comes out of lockdown, and they will have to come out of lockdown at some stage, and possibly a month, 2 months from now, because the reason for the lockdown, Omicron, is going to fade at some stage. China will have to stimulate like a lot as far as their own economy is concerned when that happens. And that's going to put pressure on the oil price again and upwards. So I don't think this oil energy story is by any means over. So for the short term, it being a cyclical share, I would stick with it. But again, always don't forget to sell, because that's going to turn at some stage as well.
Rikus, I think you're keen to take this one. Is it possible to convert my Process JSE shares for Process Amsterdam shares without selling my shares on the JSE and then buying in Amsterdam with the value being less than 1 million rand? Quite a technical one there, Rikus.
Yeah, short answer is I don't know whether one can do it. The second comment there is, why would you want to do it? I mean, apart from arbitrage pricing difference between the local price and the Amsterdam price, what are you going to gain? I mean, you're going to move from the, I suppose, South African shareholders book to the offshore shareholders book, but but you're not changing beneficial ownership. So I'm not quite sure why you would do that unless there's a feeling that, you know, not being on these South African shareholders book is less risky than being in Europe. But I can't get my head around as to why one would want to do that.
All right. Okay, let's move on to some more questions, something easier. Can I ask your panel's view on the hotel, tourism, and gaming sector? When can we see a recovery this year? I don't know. How soon can we see a recovery to pre-pandemic levels, or is that just not on the table, specifically for the short term, Carl?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think everyone wishes they had that answer, and I mean, I think we are definitely moving towards a bit more of a normal environment, even though we're currently seeing an increase in infections and so on. But I think the world has sort of worked out how to, and in fact, we have to learn how to live with the, you know, with the virus, and with vaccination rates being at least at a reasonable level. I think as long as the you know, I think ultimately people will become more and more comfortable to travel, and I think there is pent up demand. And you know, if you're just trying to look at booking, you're already during holidays, and if you look at the traffic, certainly people are more out and about. But yeah, within that sector, I mean, the companies that on the JSE, like City Lodge, Tsoko Sun, Sun International, have all, you know, been really hard hit by the pandemic, as are most of the you know, tourist or related industries. And amongst them, I'd probably pick Tsoko Sun. I mean, it's still down 50% since, you know, since the pandemic started. But I think the benefit they have is that they do have the gaming element, and all of them, you know, all the companies have cut costs. So I think while it's a tricky one to time them, you know, if you have a little bit of, I wouldn't put a huge amount of my portfolio into them, but in terms of a potential recovery, one could put something in there and hope and bet on a recovery. If it takes a year or two, I think it might take a bit longer than people imagine.
Rikus, were your bets on the recovery of that tourism sector? And I mean, Carl mentioned that he would go for Tsoko Sun, which has a gaming element. I know Sun International also does. Or maybe would you rather focus on a City Lodge, for example, that's exposed to business travel?
I think that whole sector has the potential to benefit from the change that we are seeing worldwide. And I stopped talking about the new normal because there is no new normal. There's maybe a new different. Because this is a generational change in both economics and politics that we are having. So in that sense, luxury, whether it be hotels or gaming, has got a lot of operational potential in it as people start returning, you know, to leisure. But they'll also have to change the way they operate. And we're seeing it already with, I think, City Lodge converting some of their rooms into apartments and that kind of thing. So these companies, you know, it's not going to go back to where it was pre-epidemic. Something different is happening. And the companies that are getting it right, in other words, can figure out what clients demand in this new set of circumstances, they're going to get it right, and there's huge potential because they've got that operational gearing. That being said, in the short term, I think we've lost 3 or 4 months of Chinese tourism because they can't get you. So as far as the next few months operational is concerned, it's going to be less than one expected. And one also has to consider that these shares have recovered pretty well from the pandemic lows, but certainly for the long term, if you can stand the volatility, I don't think it's a bad place to be.
Quite interesting there that you mentioned that City Lodge is now converting some of the rooms to apartments. Quite interesting because we know that the apart hotel trend is booming at the moment. I actually want to go into the property sector, another sector that's that was hard hit by COVID. We had Equites, which has actually benefited from the trends that we have seen coming out of COVID-19, posting strong results for the year ended February, continuing to pay out and grow dividends. But now there's a debate on whether that share price is starting to look expensive. I mean, it's back to pre-pandemic levels, not something that we've seen with a lot of REITs. Carl, your take on Equites, is it looking expensive or not?
Yeah, I mean, if one, you know, one of the best ways to look at whether property stocks are expensive or not is to look at the yield that they're trading at. And if you look at Equites trading at an 8% forward dividend yield compared to the market, the property market of about 9%. So that tells you it's a bit more expensive than the market. But I think where Equites has probably benefited from a valuation rating is its growth profile. And as you said, the area where it operates benefited from the pandemic, you know, in terms of the industrial side of the portfolio, warehousing and so on. And I think the management certainly see a lot of growth in that area. So I think it probably justifies a bit of a premium there. But I think overall, the property sector will come under pressure as rates increase. So as yields rise, you know, we've seen the US Treasury yields breaching 3% locally. Our yields are probably going to increase over time when interest rates normalize. And that, in terms of the property sector, will put pressure on the share prices of property stocks. But the benefit they do have is that there's growth.
Rikas, how are you looking at Equites with its SA exposure? Of course, we do know the structural challenges that we are still dealing with in our economy. Or are they maybe protected by the long-dated leases?
Okay, there's two things. Equites was one of the market leaders in establishing nodes as far as you know, online retail delivery is concerned. That was a great move, except that competition in that space is fierce. So they're not the innovators there anymore. Secondly, what struck me was that on their latest sense announcement, they announced a joint venture as far as development of their property is concerned, and they didn't do a book build, which is the way they've been financing it for the last number of years. In other words, I think, and I'm guessing here, that they took a look and said, okay, how are we going to do the funding for our next project? Nobody's going to buy our shares at these prices. This is the way we're going to do it. So I could be wrong, but that to me is a bit of a flag. And as Carla said, you know, they're not necessarily cheap when compared to other players in the M sector. So I'm sort of neutral on that. Or in other words, I just think there's probably safer and better opportunities elsewhere.
All right. Let's go to Altron. They actually had a trading update yesterday. There's a question here. I'm a little surprised at Altron's share price movements yesterday after their trading update. I know their earnings took a hit from the exclusion of Bytes, but from continuing operations, HEPS will surge as much as 78%. Carl, I mean, should the market not have priced the total hit in HEPS here from that exclusion of Bytes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the market should have, you know, obviously excluded Bytes from the comparatives. So, I mean, to be honest, I didn't really pay too much attention to the result yesterday. But I think overall, obviously, Bytes, like Altron as a company, has done exceptionally well over the last, call it, 5 years. And if one takes the total return, including the Bytes distribution, I mean, it has been very impressive. So I think, I think as a business, what's left is still, you know, tech focused, growth focused, and I think at least the direction that from where they've taken it has been quite exceptional, probably benefiting from some of the misfortune of EOH and the like. So, but overall, I think not a bad long term holding, a good strategy. But I think, you know, also from a liquidity point of view, you know, it would help to be a bit bigger so that the bigger institutions get involved. But I think quite a decent company.
Rikas, I saw you're not there, so I'm guessing you're also bullish on the company's life after Bytes. So anything you want to add?
Yeah, Well, first of all, I think the market did anticipate these results because the price has gone from about 7 rand to 9 rand, and yesterday's results was just selling on the news. I'm sad they lost their CEO, Natia. I think he was absolutely fantastic in turning that market, that company around. And what they're left with after the Bytes distribution are poised to do well if new management can execute the strategy that Natie implemented a few years ago. So it's certainly one on my radar, and I'd love to see what they do over the next 6 to 12 months, how the efforts are paying off. But yeah, if the narrative turns out to be positive, I'm positive on that company as well.
All right. We have 20 seconds each for your stock picks. Carl, you go first.
So yeah, today I'm going with a locally listed company. I've always gone with the offshore one, but yeah, just after yesterday's quarterly result, Mondi, I think has done quite well, in a tough environment. Obviously, the Russian impact is known, and the share price has corrected for that. But I think the other operations really benefiting from good pricing, and that's always positive, and it'll probably continue for the next at least year or so. They've got a good balance sheet, 1x net debt to EBITDA, and then also, they are investing in growth. So I think in terms of quality, relative quality also, and valuation compared to peers like a Smurfit Kappa and Smiths and Stora Enso, I think Mondi is quite a good holding in that sector.
Rikus, is something that you think is a good holding?
The Satrix India ETF. I can talk for half an hour about this, but very, very shortly. The current market is so volatile that I just can't decide, or it's difficult to pick anything. So I'm taking a really long-term 10-year view on this. The locus of economic power in the Far East has changed. China's export-driven growth is coming to an end. And there's various reasons for that, including the pandemic, which showed up the logistics problem we've got, plus obviously the war in Russia, which adds to that. India is perfectly placed to take over that role from China. They've had a domestic-driven economic growth over the past number of years, with Modi being elected and him centralizing power from what is essentially a federal state. That can lead to a export-driven growth, specifically in the sense that they form part of a quad, as they call it, with the US, the UK, Australia, and Japan, forming both an economic and a military cooperation group. So they've got everything going for them. It's in the execution. And I think in the longer term, India's growth might surprise us.
Right. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your insights. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Carl Geewers from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Rikus Reeders from PSG Wealth Sandton. From Izinathi Guma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.